Retro Nerd.
And welcome to Previously on Lost. This is episode number 70. As we are looking, well, as we're trying to go through the looking glass, and I'm excited because this is our season finale episode. And if you watched it on Hulu, it was in two parts. If you watched it on DVD, I don't know because I watched it on Hulu, so it was in two parts. And but listen, I'm excited about talking about this episode. It's a great one. It's a good one. It's one that the fans didn't think they would ever see happen, but it did happen. So we'll talk about that as we get to it. But I'm one of your hosts. I am Mike, and we have another host with us tonight, and he is trouncing through the forest on his way to the radio tower now. Steven, how are you?
I'm doing good, I just got to turn off these other recordings going on here. Seems like it's been playing for a while. I don't know.
Just a little bit it has, but I'm glad you turned it off. Glad you're with us. Corey, unfortunately, is unable to be with us tonight. He is off doing some work, and but we look forward to having him back on our next episode when we kind of go over season three again and look forward to season four. But in his place, we had found somebody who is standing outside of an airport runway screaming, "We got to go back," and he's coming back. Mr. Joe Tavano, how are you, my friend?
You stole my line. You introduced me. I was going to go, "We have to go back, Mike. We have to go back." Oh, I'm doing great. And I got to tell you, I love the show. And this is, without a doubt, my favorite episode of this entire series. And I have been propositioning Mike to be on this episode for, I don't know, since the show started, probably since episode one. I'm like, listen, I don't care what you do, but I need to be on to talk about this episode, no matter what.
That is all. He has been, but you know, it's been great. We've been looking forward to having you, and it kind of really worked out well. You kind of stole my next question was, what was your favorite episode of the show? Because, you know, he just told us, so we got it.
Bro, this and, is it. This was like a TV event of like epic proportions in my life, and oh my god, I was 26 years old. It was 2006, right? Am I right on that, or is it 27?
2004
is when it started.
2000, yep. 2000. All right, so I must have been 27 then. Oh, that was even crazy. 2007, and that was just a wild show. I remember like being so excited for it. This is like the height of my Lost fandom. And yeah, I remember getting, I don't know if it was beer or wine, but I got myself, I went to my room at my parents' house, because I was still living there. I locked the door. I'm like, whatever happens, do not even talk to me from like 8 to 11, like at all. And I drank my wine, I got good and rocked, and I enjoyed this episode to a T, because that's what you do in your 20s.
did you start off with season one when you started with the show on TV, or did you jump in later on in the show?
No, I started towards the end of season two, and
okay,
yeah, I watched one episode like out of order at my buddy's house, and I'm like, this is really good. This is better than people are talking about, and they're like, two buddies I really trust. They were like, Yeah, it's really, really good. You have to start it. You have to watch episode one immediately. So I spent that summer, the summer after season two, and I watched one and two, like, immediately, and I could not wait for season three to start. And I watched season three live with everything else. But I didn't sort of get into, like, what was going on the internet at all. I sort of kept it to myself the entire time.
Wow.
But after Through the Looking Glass, that changed, and I completely embraced, like, I was on Lostpedia like crazy. I don't know if you guys know this, I'm the guy who invented the term guyliner for Richard Alpert. That was me.
Really?
Yeah. Nice. I got, like, I went deep down the rabbit hole of this series. And probably that's why it hurt so much when it ended, and I realized they were making it up as they went along. But not until this point. That's the thing. And that's why I think the show is, like, this episode is my favorite one. And that's why I think, like, man, Like, yeah, this was like, I feel this was the entire climax of the entire series, and it was just like peak perfection in this series and maybe in TV. I don't know. It ushered in the golden age of TV. I can just filibuster for an hour, guys. Maybe you guys can leave the room.
No. This is good. This is good.
Cool.
We've already kind of told our origin stories before, back, you know, earlier when we started recording. You know, mine was, I was dating a girl and I lied to her and told her that I've seen Lost, and I'm sitting here reading, you know, the Wikipedia page, seeing all these characters that I like, and then I was like, you know, I probably ought to really watch this thing, and I watched it and fell in love with it. So, and it was like in season three when all that happened. So it was great. Oh,
guys, this episode aired May 23rd, 2007. That is almost to the day 15 years from when we're recording.
Absolutely.
That is wild. Almost to the day.
Yep. Before we talk about this episode, I do want to remind you guys that we are out on social media, all of our shows, all of our all of us. Of course, I'm not on Twitter. You know, Twitter's, well, it's Twitter. So I eventually just left Twitter myself personally. But hey, if you want to find me and you do want to talk to me, we are in the RetroZap Discord, and you can more than welcome to find me in there. Joe, I know, is on Twitter as well. And so you can find him out on Twitter. You can find him in Discord. And you are mentioning your other show that you do as well is what now?
I do Bruising Blasters, a Star Wars show. We've been on a little bit of a hiatus, but we're coming back. And there's also the Dune podcast that I've been doing since 2016, Dunecast, the number one Dune podcast that is that's out there. So, yeah, we haven't been around for a while as well, but when we come back, we do big shows. We have a lot to talk about, and we don't. It's a weird one, but we do long, we do big shows, and when they drop, it's almost like an event.
I suppose I should probably watch Dune before I listen to the show.
Dude, we have a primer for you. You listen to episode zero, then you can read Dune, then watch Dune. Do it all. It's amazing. It'll blow your mind.
Awesome. And of course, Steven, you are out there too, my friend.
Yeah, I'm still on Twitter. Lucky13Steve at Lucky13Steve on Twitter.
There you go. Hey, and all of our shows, guys, and everything about the network, you can find at RetroZap.com. So keep all that stuff in mind. Now, the part we're getting to. Let's talk about this episode. As Joe said, this was Season 3, Episodes 22 and 23, depending on where you found it. It was released just about 15 years ago to today, May 23rd, 2007, directed by Jack Bender and written by Carlton Cuse and Damon Lindelof. I mean, it's the perfect trio.
The Holy Trinity right there. Right. It really is. When you have Carlton Cuse, Damon Lindelof writing it, and Jack Bender like directing it, you know this is like info's dropping. It's gonna be big. I'd say this is the biggest episode they've done since the pilot. They made this an event too on ABC. This was like something they were promoting for a long time, and they were like, "You have to move." They cleared their entire schedule. It was a 2-hour event, limited commercials. It was so cool, which is why I was like, I remember that whole day too. I was so excited for it. I took like a half day at work. I had a couple of like errands I had to do, and all day I'm just like, couple hours until Lost. And I got to tell you, there's been no show since then. And this is like the golden age of streaming. There's been no show that I've been that excited about. Right. Yeah, just it's unbelievable.
I mean, there've been a couple for me that I've been pretty, that's pretty much on that level for me. For me.
Maybe it's because it was like my first, you know?
Right.
You always love your first. It's a very special way.
This was really big. I mean, now, when Cobra Kai or Stranger Things comes out, I'm kind of right along those same lines. This week is like a holy grail for me. You know, you have Stranger Things is dropping on the same day. Kenobi's premiering on the same weekend. Top Gun Maverick's coming out. I mean,
It's a big weekend. But the difference is, like, you know, we're forced to get this drip from Lost, you know, and then you were waiting and theorizing. And even in the streaming era, it's not the same. It just because you're just not going to get the same amount of people, the mass quantity of people all watching the same show. Even if it's like Boba Fett, Mandalorian, it's still not the same. This was huge. Millions and millions and millions of people are all watching this all at the same time, and you know they are. And that's so much different. So when you watch Stranger Things, no one's all watching it at the same time. They're inhaling it like a snake, like at some point during the weekend. That's what we do now. We just open our mouths and we just like gorge all this in like a very short period of time. But everyone's on the drip for Lost on prescribed. It really was like I remember reading an article about like you know the transition to like streaming and how entertainment's changed. I remember like Lost was really the last show that was like absolutely appointment set. You know, viewing, and it was just it was really a different show in so many ways. Like just watching a show that had commercial breaks, like it was so wild to see how they wrote for that and how normal that was back then. But it's not something that you really think about or even see at all anymore in you know, prestige television.
Yeah, I mean that's true. I mean, and it was, you know, I think streaming to a point has ruined us. I think it's good on some shows. Like to me, there are some shows that are worth streaming and just binging. That if they were done week to week, I would have not lost interest in them. Yeah. But this was not one of those for sure. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, so in this episode, kind of a long summary for this one, Charlie and Desmond try to carry out the plan to knock out the transmission blocking signal in the Looking Glass Station, but Charlie gets captured by two women named Greta and Bonnie, whom are others, the underwater Looking Glass Station on Ben's orders. Meanwhile, Jack leads the Flight 815 survivors from the beach to the radio tower several miles inland to try and signal Naomi's freighter, which is somewhere off the coast. Elsewhere, old John Locke recovers from his wound after being shot and left for dead by Ben, just to have a vision of Walt, who has aged quite a bit, tell him a clue about the people coming for them. Back at the beach, Saeed, Bernard, and Jen await the arrival of a team of others with an explosive trap. Sawyer and Juliet decide to return to the beach to camp to help out Saeed. After she has to give Jack a kiss first. Bernard and Jen, after they get captured, and Hurley tags along to help, although they tell him to go back. In the future, Jack is back in Los Angeles, living through a meaningless existence as a drunkard and revealed to have somehow escaped from the island.
Yeah!
So a couple of episode facts.
I love depressed, like cares about nothing nihilistic Jack. Nihilistic Jack was like, that was my entire style for 2007-2008. Like you can look back, my Facebook profile still is, I never updated it from that era. And it's like, I had the beard, before I went this bald, I had like the haircut, I had the glasses, I wasn't alcoholic, I wasn't nihilistic, but that was like my vibe so much. And like just blasting metal and Nirvana out of my car, that was me right then.
That's funny.
Identified.
That's funny. Just a few episode facts. Sarah was not originally pregnant, but when Julie Bowen showed up on set, they decided not to cover her pregnancy because it was more painful to Jack to see how his ex-wife had moved on with her life. This was the highest rated episode of Lost, along with The Constant, which we'll get here in just a few weeks as well in season 4. The final scene, which reveals that the flashback is actually a flash forward to life after the survivors are off the island, was kept a secret from everyone on the show's cast. The only two people to know were Matthew Fox and Evangeline Lilly, who knew about it right before the episode aired. I mean, this was like pre, like Twitter spoils everything for people. Era there was no rumors. You could not have seen. At watching this, I tried to put myself back in 2007, realizing that in 2007 I was tweeting from it as a text message from my phone to a Twitter phone number. And so like to a computer,
Twitter was like nothing back then.
Right, like that's where I was at. So I was trying to put myself in a predicament. Like, okay, if I was watching this and did not know obviously what was going on, I never would have thought that this was a flash forward. The only time that would have made any sense, and it blew me off, was when I saw the reveal of how long it took Kate to come out of the dark at the end of the episode. Like, that was like, whoa, this is not a flash forward. I mean, I'm in a flashback.
At that point, yeah. At that point, it's like the game is up. You're like, and you're piecing it all together. Like, what? Like, yeah. I think my excitement right now is the excitement I've been holding in to talk about this episode for like 15 years. I swear to God. Because, like, that was just, it's like, what is going on? I couldn't believe it. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Like, this was like such mind blowing stuff because you get in this 3-year, 3-season sort of focus, and you expect the entire structure to be the same, and you figure out that, oh my God, we're at the halfway point, and then they're like, we're like, the show is like aware of that, and everything is about to change. You realize that everything was a change after this, and like, you've just turned an entire corner, and everything you knew is totally off kilter, and getting off the island is not the goal of the damn show. So you're like, what the hell are they talking about? What is the show even about anymore? Like, yeah, they got off and they came, they want to go back. Like, what?
What? So yeah, so what happened? It was one of those times in TV history that, you know, obviously there was Facebook and stuff like that, and there was some, you know, some blog posts and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you had, you know, Lost Podcast with Jay and Jack, and you had the Dharma Lawyers and all them going at it. So when you talk about that, you think they would have to wait until September. Like, there was nothing out there. Like, the rumors were not now in these TV shows.
Yeah, the rumors were.
You had to wait.
The script leaked. The script did leak. But if you didn't know where to look, and if you weren't looking at the right forums, you were going to miss it. Entirely. Google wasn't aggregating that stuff. You just weren't going to find it. And that's it. Like, I was into Lostpedia. Lostpedia was my place. I didn't really go to anywhere else. So if you were on, was it Entertainment Weekly? That had the forum about it. That was huge. I forget. But it was a major, you know, one of the major publications had a pretty big forum about it. If you were there, you weren't going to see it if it dropped there. So, like, that's the way it was. It was very website-focused, the fandom back then. Yeah, it's crazy.
Absolutely.
It's so different now. You know, I watch shows, and if it's on streaming, I go in and I try to block everyone I could think of on Twitter that might give a spoiler, and somehow the spoilers still get through. You know, people you don't expect to be talking about a show. If you don't watch it at midnight when it first comes out on streaming, you're going to get spoiled for it.
Look, I was spoiled this past weekend. People may not know, I like wrestling. I enjoy watching wrestling still. I've loved it my entire life. I've loved wrestling.
So you're going to tell me you just found out it's not real?
No. So, like, there was a huge match scheduled for last Friday night, and I was like, okay, I've got to stay off Twitter. I've got to say all these things, so I don't know what's going on. Well, unfortunately, there's some wrestling podcasts to listen to that in their title, they spoiled the really big thing that happened. I'm like, no, so now I know what's going to happen. It just, like, deflates me. So, yeah, it's different now.
It is crazy. Like, just, you know, I think that was, like, half of why this episode was so exciting. But the other half is, like, everything has been building to this, but they really, really executed an unbelievable season finale. Like, the writing, the acting, the structure of the show, like, everything came together in such an unbelievable way. So many plot lines were resolved, and at the same time, so many plot lines expanded so, so much. If only they had a plan for the second half of the show, I mean, it really would have been a perfect show. I dislike the last three seasons. I do not. I do not dislike them. I like them quite a bit. I think up until the last episode, I really liked the entire series. Looking back at it, and I liked the end of the series when I watched it. I cried. But I don't know. I just wish they had a plan.
Well, and that's the thing, you know, they already knew the show was ending when it was ending. We had mentioned this a few episodes ago, Steven, that they knew how many more seasons they had left, knew when it was going to be done with. And as much as I, as much as I'm a DC fan for their movies, I have to say, they probably needed a semi Kevin Feige to kind of work everything around.
This
is what we need for season six. This is where we got to go. But anyways, So we'll talk about the episode a little bit more. Steven, tell us how many days we've been on the island. Tell us previously on Lost what happened, and then we'll jump into the storylines.
All right. We've been on the island for 91 days. And previously on Lost, knowing the others are on their way, the island survivors come up with a plan to take out the others on the beach. Jack and the rest of the survivors prepare to begin their trek towards the radio tower to shut off the transmission and use the satellite phone to call the freighter for help. After knocking out Desmond, Charlie swims down into the underwater Dharma station, only to be greeted by two women.
Hello.
All right.
So one thing you may not know about that it's been 91 days, this is a Christmas episode. This happened around December 20th on the island.
At least the water's not cold. Well, that could have been rough.
Oh wow, Christmas episode. Wouldn't even notice.
Charlie did give Aaron his ring last episode. So I mean, it kind of, you know, brought a little bit of gift giving there. All right, so we have three storylines. We have the island storyline, we have the looking glass storyline, and then of course we had the flash forward. So let's talk about a little bit about what happened on the island. That's probably the most time was taken in these 2 hours was on the island, the other track, you know, Ben and all them. So what are y'all's thoughts on some of the island storylines, some parts that stuck out to you a little bit? You know, in my mind, the main points that stood to me is I am a dentist. I am not Rambo. I love the interaction.
It's a great line.
Bernard.
I love Bernard as an actor too. He's a great actor. I mean, going back to WKRP in Cincinnati, I was a fan of this guy.
He's good.
He just has like this kind face, you know what I mean? And you see him with the gun, like you feel like that's a good guy trying to do good things.
Right. Oh yeah. Now, so one of the things that kind of bothered me a little bit is I do want to talk about Jack just a second, okay?
Okay.
So Jack kind of bothers me because he gives this nice intimate kiss with Juliet when Juliet and Sawyer go back toward the beach, and then he turns around and probably an hour later maybe on island time, they're all filling up water and Kate's like, oh, they should have been back by now. And he says, you know, I wish you would have listened to me when I told you don't come back for me. Well, why did you not want me to come back for you? Well, I want to protect you because I love you. And I'm like, no, wait a minute, Jack. No, wait a minute. You can't have, you can't go after both women here, buddy.
He didn't try to protect her. Sawyer tried to protect her. And this was a whole culmination of.
Well, no, he tried to protect her originally by saying, don't come back for me when he was captured by the others.
True.
That's what I'm getting. He said, because I love you. And I'm like, no, wait a minute. You just gave Juliet a nice long kiss, buddy. You love her.
Yeah, but I saw this in much different. He was also talking with Sawyer. He was like, well, why did Sawyer not tell me he was going to get, because he didn't want you to get hurt, just like blah, blah, blah. And he's like, because I love you. Why did you tell me? Because I love you. And this is a big culmination of this whole love triangle, will they, won't they, between Kate, Juliet, and Jack, and Sawyer. I guess it's like a, I don't know, parallelogram or whatnot. Yeah, it's something. And like, it was like, I love you, but I'm letting you go at the same point. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like it all came to a point there, and it's like, he's going to be with Juliet, you know, Zuri's going to be with Lost, and then we find out it all gets thrown, you know,
it all gets thrown off the island.
Yeah. Things are way different.
It is kind of fun seeing this episode, knowing where all those four characters end up.
Oh, I know.
Seeing, you know, just the when Juliet goes off with Sawyer. I mean, who would ever thought that these characters would all end up, you know, where they ended up? So that's
so,
kind of fun.
So much, such odd couples. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Oh yeah. And like I've really, I think this, when he said "I love you" to Kate, though. Back in 2007, this was like the culmination of three seasons. Like, please just freaking tell each other how you feel. And then they did, and then they gave you what the audience wanted, and then you get into season four, you realize maybe that's not really what you wanted.
Yeah.
To begin with, and they show you that.
Dude, like, that's why, like, when I was being 27 when the show came out, like, this was, like, my life. You know, this was, like, yeah. like me trying to figure out which girl I wanted to be with, like, dating like crazy. You know, like, these were all, like, the big dramas of my life. And, you know, it was, like, the most ultimately relatable thing, like, to see all of this, like, being portrayed in this massive, dramatic, adventurous way, you know, on screen. It was so, like, cathartic in so many ways. It's so funny.
Oh, yeah.
Kate got a lot of, you know, there's a lot of Kate haters out there, but I do kind of feel for her here on this trek. Because, I mean, talk about just a roller coaster of emotions. I mean, this girl isn't really doing anything to ask for any of this, but she's got Sawyer's out there telling her, you know, he just being mean to her for no reason, you know, other than to protect her. And then Jack's just out of nowhere, hey, I love you. You know, it's like she's not asking for all of this back and forth. And it really is a roller coaster of emotions for her walk.
Because you see her face after she was like, she was like, what? Like, oh, my God. Oh, gee. Oh, what am I even thinking of? Yeah, totally threw her for a loop.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and you had mentioned Sawyer, you know, the way he was. You know, of course, he was also mean to Hurley, too, but we understand why he was doing it. He wanted to protect Hurley. Everybody liked Hurley. So he wanted to protect Hurley and just, you know, of course, Hurley came back in the van. Woo, woo, woo. I was so glad we got to see that against Steven. I completely, listen, as many times as I see this, I completely forgot until I saw that. I was like, no, I forgot he goes back against the van.
It's such a great save. It really is.
It really is. It really is. Because, you know, as Steven knows, my favorite episode is season 3, episode 11, where Hurley finds the van.
Great episode.
So, great episode. But I love this because this is also on this storyline. And maybe Steven could talk a little bit about that, too. This is where you start to get the foundational building blocks of Sawyer and Juliet. This is like their dynamic. They're rubbing against each other, and they're clicking. And I've always been a lot of people try to ship Sawyer and Kate. I'm sorry. To me, Sawyer and Juliet will always be the better match for one another.
It's like you see why they work. You know what I mean?
Right.
It doesn't look like it works. It feels like it works with them. You know what I mean? Like, they get each other in a really intuitive way that doesn't look right on paper. And that's the way real life is. And I thought that's why that was, like, it made so much more sense. You know, because that's just sort of how life works. And that's why the show is different. You know what I mean? You don't see people going that deep into character anymore. You don't see these plots being considered and deliberated and made to feel like real life like that. You just don't see that anymore. It's so wild. You guys, I know you guys have a whole you know, a structure in the way you do the show, but I'm like an agent of chaos here.
Go for it.
Are we going to talk about the Star Wars stuff now or later?
Talk about it now. Go for it.
Okay. So this show is, this episode is Return of the Jedi. Were you guys aware of this?
Really?
Yes. This episode was inspired by Return of the Jedi. You can find that in the Doctor's name being Hamill, but you can also find it in the plot structure. Because this plot structure is an orchestra. It truly is an orchestra. And Damon Lindelof is on record about this, not a theory, this is true. And they base it on the idea that Han Solo had to send his strike team down to Endor to disable the deflector shield, just like Charlie and Desmond had to go out to the Looking Glass to disable the transmitter, while the real mission was Jack and his team going separately off in that second way to get to the radio tower in order to be saved. So it was completely inspired by that. Gotta get the deflector shields down so they can win. Like, that was major, major. Yeah.
I never thought about that.
Yeah. And let me tell you, in 2007, there were not people making this sort of Star Wars illusions, this sort of fandom. It was, again, it was sort of dead between 2005 and 2008. And like, yeah, Lost was one of the rare shows keeping the dream alive with that. And you get it more later in the seasons. But yeah, this was huge, huge. You're like, oh my God, they're doing Return of the Jedi. It's crazy.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And yeah, I look at the structure and the way the show is edited like a symphony. It really does. Because you have, just like George Lucas, intercutting the action. Like everything is interspersed, happening all at the same time, and it all culminates exactly and synchronously at the same time at the end. They get off the island, Charlie dies, and you find out we have to go back, like, pretty much all at the same time. You're like, boom, boom, boom. Like, it's wild.
That's awesome.
How well that's orchestrated.
I never would have thought about that.
Yeah, and that really, when all of that happens, that is literally, like, if you were looking, drawing, like, a mountain, that would be literally the peak of this show. And then everything else is falling action after that.
Awesome. I never thought about that. That's really cool. Yeah. I never thought about it like that.
Well, knowing the writers, that definitely doesn't surprise
makes
me.
Makes sense.
100%. Yeah, that's Damon Lindelof for you. That's 100% him.
All right. Now let's try to bring the chaos back in. And
I got a lot more.
All right. Anything else on the island storyline?
Oh, there's a lot more on the island storyline.
We're just getting warmed up, Stephen. We're just getting warmed.
One conversation I think I forgot how important it was, but where Saeed at the beginning talked to Jack and told him, no matter what you do, keep moving. He's like, don't come back for us. He's like, I'm willing to give my life if it means getting us rescued, which I forgot how much that influenced Jack's actions the rest of this, you know, 2 hours. I mean, when he had to, you know, as far as he knew, he let them, you know, he let Ben kill them or have them be killed because it was that important. Saeed told him to keep going no matter what.
Naveen Andrews, man, huh?
He's one of the unsung leaders of this group that does not get enough credit in the show.
Well, I've been saying all along, the original plan for him and Kate to be the leaders and to kill off Jack and the pilot, the one that the network nixed, to me, that could have been a more interesting show. Because, I mean, Saeed is by far the most capable leader on the show. Like, not even close.
yeah, he is very capable. The guy gets the job done. Saeed almost never lets you down. Pretty much. I used to say that. Yeah. Like, Saeed always comes through. Saeed never lets you down. He's like the guy who gets the job done no matter what. Right till his last breath. And that was like such a fun thing. But I'm like, watching, I'm like, look at his performance. I'm like, I believe this guy. Like, my God, just looking 15 years back, like, where has this guy been? We need him back in Hollywood. Like, he's so good. I think that about a lot of these characters because I don't watch CBS. I don't see them all on Hawaii 5-0 and whatever. But man, we need some back.
see, I saw them all in Hawaii 5-0. So I got Hurley back. I got Jen back. I got them all back on Hawaii 5-0.
Nice. I watched Sawyer on Colony, and that was enough for me.
That was a really good show, and I hated that they canceled that mess.
Yeah, it was a bit of a hot mess, but it was really good too.
Yeah, of course he was also in that show too. I don't know if you guys saw it, but it only ran for like 8 episodes. Like right at the loss called Intelligence, where he had that chip implanted in his brain.
Yeah, that one's okay. I let that one go. That one was okay to let go.
Yeah,
he had a pretty high profile gig here recently on Yellowstone. But spoiler alert, that one got cut short.
A little bit snake bit there.
I don't think they broadcast Yellowstone up here in Massachusetts.
That's one of those universes that are growing really big. And matter of fact, they're growing so big they just knocked on Harrison Ford for the next television spinoff series in Yellowstone for like the 1934 episode version of it. I think they just did 1883, but he's going to be like the 1934 when Harrison Ford got signed on to do it.
Him and Helen Mirren too, right?
Yeah, they did. So it's getting big.
Wow, that is pretty big.
And I'm loving that universe. Yeah, I don't the last thing I'm looking up Naveen Andrews, the last thing Naveen Andrews has been in was he did a mini series in 2022 called The Dropout.
Yeah. Also weird. But I always thought
he's
been married to Barbara Hershey for years. Like, who is definitely an older actor than he. That's a weird pairing. You think Sawyer and Juliet.
Okay, so I remember where I saw him now. I'm sorry. I saw him the last time I saw Naveen Andrews play. He played Jafar in Once Upon a Time in Wonderland when that show came out on ABC.
Yeah, that's an ABC contract thing right there.
That's right.
It still kind of catches me off guard, though, when I hear him with his English accent. Like, he'll always be Saeed to me. It's just so weird hearing his English accent.
His voice is like two octaves higher in real life, too. Wild.
You guys are good.
Yeah.
All right. So let's see. So, like you said, Saeed tells Jack, keep moving no matter what. We get the famous Bernard and Rose introduction with one another. You're not Rambo. You're just a dentist. So keep that in mind. And then they go. They go their separate ways.
Yep.
On this little trek, obviously, Ben finds out that.
Hold on. I got to stop you right there. Before we get to that, I got to stop. Them walking out right there. That's like the first commercial break. And then you hear Michael Giacchino drop some like magic right there. Like, I don't know. The theme for this episode is it's literally new music just for here. And it is so good. I'm like, it's like a jam. It's like, dun.
That is absolutely one of my favorite songs he does.
Like, I'm like a rock and metal guy. I can like totally feel that as a riff, you know? Like, it's so good. Giacchino's until like Rogue One, I don't think Giacchino would ever been better.
he knows how to send his characters on a trek for sure.
Now he just did the music for what was it? He just did the music for.
Oh, he's everywhere. He's everywhere now.
Something big just came out. He did the music for. I can't remember what it was. Oh,
edit this part out. Oh, I'm looking it up.
Now he's got me wanting to go back and listen to these CDs of all the lost Michael Giacchino soundtracks.
Oh yeah. So it's so good. It's. I feel like it didn't hit as well on the soundtrack for some reason. I don't know why.
It
really didn't. Oh, he did. All right. So he did Star Trek Prodigy, the show, The Owl House, that's coming out, I think.
He did something recently he's done Spider-Man No Way Home, Rogue, Star Wars Story. Oh, yeah, the Rogue Batman. It was the Batman with Robert Pattinson. I knew it was something recent. And that film score is really good on the Batman.
It's really, really good. Definitely. He's going to do Jurassic World Dominion coming up as well. And Thor Love and Thunder. Very cool. Spider-Man. He's everywhere. He does tons of stuff. He's a great... He's one of the next, like, auteur composers, for sure. For sure.
Jurassic World definitely seems, like, right down his alley, you know?
100%.
He's perfect for that.
Yeah. And I got to tell you, like, that's why... You know, this show is just elevated above because you have a guy like Giacchino coming into your show. Like most shows don't get a Michael Giacchino. You know what I mean? like just like doing their music, like it's no big thing. Like it was such an elevation. They just got so lucky with having such a talent just right there, right at the beginning of his career. Like just so much energy, really pouring his heart into it, and you felt so much emotion through that music. I can still hear the last. I don't remember the last moments of the series finale as much as I remember hearing them. Look, I remember, you know, how it laid out just such a dramatic, operatic sort of ending. And it's just this way, bringing it all back, Agent of Chaos, to the scene when they're walking out. And you hear that, dun, 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 dun. I'm like, let's go. Let's do this. I'm like, yeah. So on board.
No. That's great. You know, and that is one of my highlight songs when I listen to the soundtrack. Like, I like listening to that one. And I'm one of those, when I listen to the soundtracks for this show, I try to picture the scene going on in my head too, and knowing what's going on in those heads going on right now in the show. So I dig that. So yeah, so they leave the beach. Naomi shows Jack how to use the phone because she won't be using it very much longer herself. Yep. And but they get there, and then of course they're up there on top of the mountain. They hear two explosions, and then you just see like everybody drop. Like, there's supposed to be three. No, Jack, there were supposed to be three explosions. And
everyone's like freaking out, you know? Jack. They're seeing such obvious stuff. They're freaking out. They're like, there was supposed to be... We know. Everyone's like, it's just like coming to understand, like, major, major crisis. People might be dead. The plan didn't work out. And you're like, oh. Like, you felt it. Like, you know this is written, but at the same time, it had that element of chance. And it just went sideways. And, like, it's just such great writing to be able to structure a plan so well and then have, like, two-thirds of it go right and one-third of it go totally wrong. And you don't know. You literally are in suspense on if any of it's going to go right in this show. Because this show didn't hesitate killing people. This show didn't hate writing people off. This show did not hesitate in letting plans go awry. So you literally... all three plans, like if that was like the big twist of season three finale, if it all went wrong, you were like, that could be it. That could be the major part. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Crazy. Also, satellite phones. They don't even exist anymore, I don't think. Maybe in the military. But like, satellite phones have been replaced by smartphones. Crazy, huge technology. You don't see that anymore. But that was a very, very high-tech thing. It had a touch screen. I mean, you just did not see that. This was way, way advanced. So when you have Naomi with a sat phone, you're like, we're dealing with some serious stuff here. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, we're dealing with some people who probably have a lot more than this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Which, were you guys into the ARGs that happened around the seasons?
Yeah, I followed the one, I forget what it was, where you found out more about the Groots and Hanso. I forget what it was called.
Oh, yeah, the Hanso Foundation.
Yeah, I followed that one a little bit, knew the story, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they were so well done. They were referenced so little in the show because it was written, like, from the outside in. But, man, it was so wild, the conspiracy they brought together. So when you got into that and you realized like what was going on with the ARG compared to what's going on with that boat, you're like, whoa, this is huge. This is a global story. It's not about people just on the island. Like, there is a lot going on the outside, and like the world just opens up like crazy, like right after this moment. It's so crazy.
Yeah.
Like every season kind of opened up a little bit more, you know. Season two opened up the world to, you know, to the to the Dharma and, mm-hmm. and learning about the hatches, and then season three obviously is expanded, and yeah, season four we're gonna really expand past the island. And
yeah, season three didn't really expand too much past what season two did. It did a little bit, but I mean, you just, you know.
I guess you learn more about it.
You learn more, but yeah, with the expansion, you go, you know, season four is the rest of the world. Season five is all of time. Season six is all of, like, reality and the forces of good and evil.
Season three was the one who taught you more about Dharma and the others and explored the inhabitants of the island and their backstory and stuff like that. So
yeah, Yep.
If you say season one was the explosive, hey, we're here. Season two was kind of the people, the survivors exploring themselves. They're in working through their inner demons, working through their inner problems, and then you start exploring the people that are around them, like the others in season three. So I like the way they gradually expanded out what you're exploring.
It's exponential. It's exponential expansions. It like goes from the beach to the island to the world to time. To reality. It's like, exactly. And beyond, like to all, right. All parallel universes and all of death and beyond. It's just like, it's wild how the scope just went like, just to mass, it encompassed everything. It encompassed literally everything.
So we would be remiss if we stopped here and we didn't mention and the next part of this story where you have the trek, you see the explosions, and as they keep trekking to the radio tower with Rousseau, of course, Rousseau says she's staying because there's nothing else out there for her.
Mm-hmm.
We go back over to where Ben's at, and Ben finds out that his wonderful daughter, Alex, has told Carl to go and warn the people. And Carl goes, by the way, I never did like Carl. I don't know why. He was weird. But he finds out, he was annoying. So Alex goes with Ben to try to get them to stop, to not make a call. Now, in my mindset as a viewer, maybe not Jack on the island, but as a viewer, when I see Ben going to Jack and says, I'm going to go talk to them and get them not to leave. I'm going to talk to them and get them not to leave. There's something as a viewer in my mind that should go off and say something's not right with why he's wanted them not to call. There's something else going on. Like there should be red flags in your mind as a viewer. Like, why is he trying to stop them? Not because he doesn't just want them to leave because he knows he's losing anyways right now. But why – there's got to be a reason why he's not. He's pleading with Jack. Jack, don't make the call.
He's compelled. He is compelled. And it's weird coming from the last time I saw the show was the series finale when it aired in, 2013? And I haven't watched really much of the show in 9 years. So I'm coming back to this, and I'm looking at Benjamin Linus, and I'm seeing him being like, oh, you are aware of a much bigger picture here. And he's, you know, and Alex is like asking him, like, why do you have to do this? And he's like, because I can't. I can't let them, like, he is like, it's not a choice for him. It's not stakes that he even has a say in. He just can't. And that's right. All he knows. It's like, this is the utter defeat of Benjamin Linus here. It's him at his lowest point. It's the loss. He's feeling like they seemingly have won. It is the most amount of hope that you've ever seen in the show. And it's like, it's glorious. And at the same time, a massive amount of hubris.
and ultimately, I mean, Ben ends up being right. All of these people coming, got a lot of people killed. Jimmy. His own daughter killed.
Jimmy. Oh man, that guy was awesome.
this scene with Jack and Ben, this whole period of time for Ben here he's just one of the most complex characters ever. And the fact that even when he's doing all this stuff and lie, you know, he admits to lying many times, but you still kind of feel like maybe he's got some good intention here. You know, when he tells, even when he says to Alex, it's like, I just didn't want him to get you pregnant. And you're like, oh, wow, okay. Maybe that's why he was so horrible to Carl. He was trying to protect his daughter from getting pregnant and dying on the island. They're like
100%. I believe him 100% there. That's the most hilarious thing about Ben.
Because the whole time it's like, why are they doing this to this poor Carl? You know, and it's like you finally get the end. Like, oh, okay, I guess that kind of makes sense.
His twisted mentality, 100%. That was he didn't like him. He didn't want Alex having a girlfriend, having a boyfriend. I mean, and that was it. And he's like, I wanted to get you pregnant. It's like, oh man. And then you think about everything with the pregnant women on the island. It's like, Oh my gosh, that was a hilarious line.
Yeah, and then you, of course, Stephen, you had mentioned your notes too. You talked about pregnancy as well. Again, for Sawyer and Kate, like those liners. When she says, so, you know, since when did you start calling me Kate? And Abrams says, let's hope you're not pregnant. Like,
I mean, that was just a harsh thing for him to say. Sawyer, sometimes you root for Sawyer, and then he does stuff like that, and it's just like, oh, come on, man.
Yeah, literally just a line to play with the audience to just make sure you don't like him too much, you know?
Yeah, this the concept of good guys and bad guys. I kind of love how Ben kind of, you know, we've been wondering what's going on with Naomi. Like, it almost seems too good to be true. She just parachutes out of nowhere. I'm here to save you guys. And then Ben kind of introduces a little bit of doubt, you know, into that. It's like, she's one of the bad guys. And, you know, we've obviously heard him refer to himself as the good guys before, which we as an audience are still kind of like, well.
How is that possible, you know?
But yeah, in some ways, just depending on how you look at it, I mean, from his point of view, sometimes you can see where he's coming from there. So.
Oh, totally. Well, Ian.
I'm of the opinion that Naomi actually, even though she was with a bad crew, I was of the opinion that Naomi was, I think she genuinely wanted to help these people out. Like,
I kind of do too.
I think she genuinely wanted to help these people out. She knew that the rest of her crew wanted whatever was on the island, and they could have it, but she wanted to get these people off. Like, she could see they were wanting to get out of this place.
If she was a spy, and if she really did have ulterior motives as a character, man, that actress played it well. And I got to tell you, I bet they didn't even tell her. I bet they told her she was heroic, she was a good person, she was a good character. Because if she knew of any of the complexity that might have been around that, I don't think she could have done the job playing so sincere. You know what I mean?
Right. She did a phenomenal job. We get, you know, before we go back to the beach scene, we get over there to the tower, and Naomi's making the call. Everybody's happy. You had this uplifting Giacchino music, and everything's great. And then you just see blood come out of her mouth, and like, oh, what just happened? You see Locke just standing over there, and Jack just loses his mind. That Locke has killed this girl.
That was coming out of nowhere. I mean, they've always clashed, right? They've always clashed. They're like two characters that just like oil and water. But this is the first time we really sort of see Locke go evil. You know what I mean? Like just plain old, like, what are you doing, guy? You know what I mean?
Right. Was he going evil, or was he, or did he realize what Ben knew at that moment? That
I believe the evil part of the island was controlling him even back then. That's sort
Smoke
of how
monster,
I always remember.
Oh yeah. No!
Like, he was the poor guy. He's just such a sad sack, just so manipulated. You want to believe in John Locke, and you really want John Locke to be all right, but it's just not in the cards for the guy. He's just manipulated and a sucker, and he got played by
everybody.
Yeah, he got played by evil forces beyond his control, and it just he was the weak and the wounded, and he was finally possessed by, those who would take advantage of him.
No.
Well, it was so fun how he was such a small part of this episode, time-wise, but was such a big part of the episode. You know, it's like, we left him a couple episodes laying in the ditch. We come back for just one little scene at the end of the first part where he's, wanting to, about to take his own life, thinking he's doesn't have rescue. Then, of course, we get the Walt appearance, mm-hmm. The much discussed Walt appearance,
and he's magically better.
Yeah, and then we don't know what happens. It's to me, it obviously this is pre Game of Thrones, but there's a little bit of Arya action. You leave a character, and then you just don't see from them again until they show up in a very important scene with a knife.
Homie got shot, and he was left for dead, and right. He comes back. And he's able to traverse the island and gets there and can kill. Like, there's something magical going on there. You know,
he's possessed by the man in black already.
Is he? Is he? He might be. He very well might be. Or at least he's like magically aided with like, you know, evil island fairy dust. I don't know. Something going on there.
This is 100% and an ongoing argument between me and Corey on this podcast about when did the smoke monster take. Of course. Now we were chatting, Steven, and by the way, I have to put it out here, and Corey can defend his position on the next episode, but I believe I was right when I said that you do not have to be dead on the island in order for the smoke monster to take the image of that person.
True.
And I found it it took me some while, but Isabelle was the first one that I found that she was never on the island. Her body was never there.
So we're pretty confident that this Walt appearance, we're thinking this was a smoke monster.
I 100% believe it.
100%.
By the way, do you know why they shot Walt from a downward angle up?
Oh, I know.
Because he had a huge growth spurt.
Yeah, that's it. Like, yeah. It was a make him look younger.
And what is the difference of like on island time? It's like what, like 10 days since he was last on the island? And like he grew like massive. His growth rate is like a foot taller. His voice is even different. It's like, yep. Grow up, drone.
Well, the only reason I ask about the smoke monster is because, you know, Walt does seem to have some other powers that other people on the, you know, other people on this island don't have. I mean, is there a mm-hmm. chance this was actually Walt, or is this definitely smoke monster?
I think it was Smoke Monster because Smoke Monster is a very manipulative being. Mm-hmm. Walt, I think, had powers, but I don't think they were this extensive. Mm-hmm. Because if you remember in the epilogue, who had to go get Walt out of the psychiatric institute? Hurley. So obviously something that was going on with Walt drove him mad when he got back home.
And then
Hurley had to go get him to bring him back to the island.
So the previous time when Wet Walt showed up to Shannon in the jungle after he'd been kidnapped, was that the smoke monster or was 100%.
That Walt? I agree. It's smoke monster.
It was because it was setting up the confrontation of Ana Lucia killing Shannon. So the smoke monster, yep. And essentially, when of course we learn this later on in the show, that the smoke monster was essentially killing off the candidates.
Yeah, that's exactly what
he's trying to do.
Yeah, and Walt, that's a good bit. It's a great bit of retcon, right? It's funny calling it retcon in the confines of the same show, but it sort of was by the way they wrote it. But yeah, the candidates, you know, you look at that, and Walt was kind of like the shining kid, and they basically just wrote out his storyline. They were like, we don't really know what to do with him, so he's just going to go home. He's fine.
Yeah.
You know? Walt lives happily ever, you know, he lived happily ever after. But so at that point, you see him show up on the island again, and like in a couple of days, his powers haven't increased to the point that he can project himself and speak to John and have all this glorious purpose. That's Smokey. That's Smokey 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of people who will not be going home to their families, as we talk about the beach people, this is great transition, Mike. We see this beach scene. By the way, I was one of those that the way it was written between Jack and Ben, there was no way back then I believed that they were actually killed. Although I thought it was really good how they tried to play it off on the beach that they weren't actually killed.
I was drunk at the time, as I aforementioned, and I totally
they killed him.
I totally believed it. I was like, "Oh, they did it! This is the season finale. They could do it. They've killed people before. They could do this. Oh my God, they're gone."
So they killed him, and then of course you see Julianne and Sawyer show back up, and they start, you know, they start the war to try to kill the rest of them. And then you see they're pinned down, and then who comes through in the end? Good old Hurley with the van, rocking people over with the van, and then trying to get out of the van, and Sawyer slams the door shut, And then, of course, we have the end of Mr. Tom Friendly. Our friendly neighborhood buddy. He finally meets his end by Sawyer. By the way, I appreciated that they kept that in mind and then just have him get killed by somebody else like Saeed. That they kept it in mind that Sawyer was the one who is you pretty much said I'm going to get you. I'm going to kill you.
He probably said that.
One of my favorite lines in the whole series was when at the hunting party when they were having the face off when Sawyer laid down his gun and said, "You and me aren't done, Zeke." And yep. I love the fact that Sawyer finally got his revenge here, and he did it for Walt, and I love that about Sawyer. I hated to see Tom die, but I love the way this happened.
I love it. He's like, I surrender. You know, like, he might have been able to give them everything if he really did surrender. But it wasn't about that. It was like, boom, you had it coming. And it was very cathartic at the same time.
It was good. It was good.
Totally.
All right. Let's do it. So, as generally what happened, Jack eventually makes the call. They're going to get rescued. Woo, uplifting music. All right. Now let's go to the depressing part. Let's talk about In the Looking Glass itself.
Okay.
All right. This is, I will just say, my only note about the entire scene was, dang, I sure do love Charlie's confidence in this scene. He's just so arrogantly confident. I love it.
This was a great Charlie.
This is, yo, it's the best. It's such a hero. It's such a hero moment for him. I sort of feel like... I feel like he was cut short at the knees, his character, a little bit. They could have done more with him. I mean, I think Don McMonaghan wanted off, and that's why they ended it here, unfortunately.
Really? Uh-huh. See, I heard that the reason they killed Charlie was not mainly just because he wanted off, but because the viewers, from what they were seeing on the blogs and posts like that, believed that they would never kill a main character like Charlie off. So the creator was like, okay.
that's cold stuff right there, because
prove to the audience that nobody is safe on this show, nobody has body armor on this show.
They killed Charlie. That makes sense. That's brutal though, because he was really just, his character could have gone the distance. He was really in his prime, but just how resolute he was and how committed to, like, helping. He was such a hero. It's pure heroism, pure altruism. So they gave him a great character arc within three seasons, even when you know it could have been longer.
I mean, I hated we got let. I was not a fan of season two, Charlie.
Oh, it's a little whiny.
Yeah, I don't think anybody was too big of a fan of baby snatching Charlie.
Well, I just wanted a fan of his character arc in season two. I didn't think, you know, for him to go as far as Barrett's Lock and that kind of, I just it didn't seem like Charlie. And
they
had a big ensemble cast and didn't know what to do with all of them.
And they didn't have a plan yet. So, right. So I feel like mid-season two to the first, like, what, six or eight episodes of season three, that's really when the contract negotiations were going on. They were spinning wheels. They had no idea how to play this show at this point. They wanted to finish it, so that's really when it was all going on. So that was huge. That was a huge, huge thing. That moment and then the writer's strike were probably the two major, like, real world moments that had an effect on the show. And they sort of happened one after another too. So that was a big thing for why it sort of felt so bland, but also why they really had to resolve him in such a profound way. It wasn't just like you shot in the head, you're gone type of deal. They really had to give him an arc at that point.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm glad they did give him the art to kind of finish him off. But like you said, I really wish they would have had a plan at the beginning where they were going.
Oh, yeah.
So he gets in there, man. He gets captured. And they start beating the crap out of him. And he's just taking it. And that's
the
it.
The one thing I will say, like, I love how he, in the background, when they said, you know, they were talking to Ben, and he's like, we don't know who he is. And he's like, it's Charlie, by the way, you know.
Tell him Charlie says hi.
Yeah. but I do think he made a pretty big mistake there in that that he tells them they found out from Juliet.
Yes.
And to me, by saying that, that kind of foiled the plan for everybody, you know, because that let Ben know, okay, Juliet is not on our side, you know, so that kind of tipped him off as to, you know, they're something's afoot.
Yeah, a little bit of hubris there, letting it go, you know? A little bit. You know, he didn't mention Carl, though. He didn't mention Carl.
Until
he does later, right?
No, right. The one who throws Carl under the bus is Bernard, isn't it?
No, it's Alex.
No, Bernard sings like a canary there. When they're threatening to shoot Jen. Oh my God, Bernard, just, you don't rob a bank with your Bernard, man. He's gonna rat you out.
He's not Rambo. Jen and Saeed are Rambo. He's not Rambo. That's it right there. You know, he says it for you.
So we go back up to the top of the lake. Desmond's just waking up from his nice slumber. And as Desmond wakes up from his slumber, he gets shot at by who but our one and only McAlligan.
McAlligan.
So,
he's
back. He is back. And he jumps down there and great set of lungs on Desmond to hold his breath that long. That was an amazing feat of strength. Every time he does it, I hold my own breath.
The guy would run stadiums. So, I mean, you know, the guy got the lung power. They laid the tracks for that.
But he's going deeper. So when you go deeper, your lungs get pushed closer and closer because it gets tighter and tighter to breathe as you go down. Just saying, pressure depth.
Scots are natural divers, brother.
Yeah. So he gets down there and he ends up hiding. And sure enough, he ends up hiding, and they come out and see Charlie. I'm just talking about him singing away. And McCall gets back down there and says, like, where's the other guy? And then they have to start looking for him.
Mm-hmm. McCall's like, I thought you were in New York. Like, yeah. Also a major revelation that the others go off the island right there, yes. Too. Huge. That was actually huge. People were...
Well, we knew they went off the island already.
Oh, okay, my bad.
Because of the submarine, remember? Because Lot blew the sub up.
The submarine!
Yeah, and then they went off the island to get Juliet and bring her.
Yeah, but there's tendrils going out into the larger world. They're all starting here. Yeah, totally.
So we get that. He's found out. Then talks to Mikhail alone. Says, kill them. Kill Charlie. find out what's going on. Kill Charlie. And meet me back here. So then we have Spear Gun Desmond, who saves Charlie and the other girl for being killed.
There's a lot of murder in this episode. A lot of murder going on.
I have to say... That shot on Mikhail from Desmond with the spear gun looked dead center into the heart. How in the world is that guy still swimming and waving at everybody and everything else like that from the outside of the water? How in the world is it possible?
He's a Bond villain. That's why. Like, Mikhail is straight up just a Bond villain. Like, yeah. This crazy mad Russian with one eye, like jacked and like in great shape. Like, the guy can do anything, you know?
Yeah.
It's hard to kill.
I will say we've seen Mikhail really questioning Ben here a lot lately, you know. Why do we think he went ahead and did Ben's dirty work here? Like, do we think he really just was following orders? Like, he clearly had doubts.
He's a true believer. Even if he had doubts, he is still loyal. That's the thing with Mikhail. He was loyal to a fault. The guy killed himself. Like, he killed himself. to just to try and thwart the plan. Like, that's commitment. That's commitment on a higher level than doubting Ben Linus for a moment.
I think Mikhail also knew that there was a plot off island to get to the island, and he knew that maybe the only way I could stop Charlie is to blow him up so that the station couldn't do it. I wonder if he knew that too, because obviously he knew about New York. So he knew, obviously, I think he would know there were people that were looking for the island.
Yeah, he definitely
just seemed like that guy, because that was his whole job. He was taking transmissions and stuff like that in his Dharma station when he was stumbled upon. He was an observer. That was his job.
Yeah, he knew the rabbit hole went deep. He really did. The guy was a total believer to the cause. And yeah, like that guy was loyal. And I also think it was a bit of pride too. He wasn't going to fail. Like, he was gleefully happy to know that he was going to kill Charlie. Like, gleefully happy. Like, guy smile, hello! You know what I mean? Like, I get a grenade, like, you are...
knocking on the window.
Yeah, like, he didn't have to do any of that. Like, total Bond villain, a bit of pride there, knowing that he would rather die than fail. Like, that right. is total commitment to whatever he believed and whatever he was trying to protect on the island.
Right. So he eventually kills Charlie, but not before Charlie gets a message, incoming transfer from Penny Widmore.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
It was awesome. We finally got her. We realized it's not her boat, as he writes on his hand, not Penny's boat.
Famous. Like, Sharpie message on hand was, like, literally, like, I think maybe the first meme I ever, like,
yep.
encountered and made myself. Like,
yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
I am with Steven here, though. And Steven, I'm going to let you say it at the end, though. When they realize it's Penny and then Mikhail blows the window up and the water's going in, I never understood this part. I'd have a thought as to why, but I personally never understood it. So,
Steven. This has bugged me for years. It's up there with Jack and Rose on the Titanic door, where Jack could have fit on that door with Rose. Charlie and Desmond could have easily escaped this situation. He went and locked the door and locked himself in there before the grenade went off and it started flooding. He could have just run through the door and locked it. And then they would have been on the other side of this, and all they would have had to do, they were able to swim down and get in there. They could have swam back up.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They could have escaped this.
Desmond escaped it. Charlie could have escaped it. You're absolutely, absolutely right. The thing is, Charlie was committed. He knew it was his time. Now we're getting into the metaphysical aspect of Lost right here. This is bigger, higher purpose. Desmond's having these visions for a reason. Earlier in the season, he tried to escape it. They tried to avoid it. It was still coming for him. It was going to come for him at some point, no matter what.
Right.
At this point, this was a death that mattered, instead of just getting randomly hit by a rock in the jungle. So that's why he did it. He did it to save them. He chose his destiny. Literally chose his own adventure.
I think part of it, too, mine kind of goes along with the thoughts of that, is that he knew in his mind that Claire was going to be rescued, and the only way for Claire mm-hmm. and Aaron to get off the island in the helicopter was that he would have to die.
Mm-hmm.
And in his mind, he said, I may not want to, I could probably make it out, but I know it's just, I'm going to mess with Claire's life, getting off the island, it's going to keep messing with Desmond, because he's going to keep having flashes of me dying, it's going to torture him. The best thing to do is for me just to let myself go, that way
Pure.
They get off the island.
Pure altruism. He didn't go down like talking about it. He didn't tell Claire. He didn't tell anyone. He was resolved, and that was it. Desmond would have saved him. Desmond totally would have saved him. But he was there, ready to let go. Like, massive, massive, massive. And it's really, 2007, really hard not to compare this to Star Wars at the time as well. When you have like a guy who like just couldn't let go and totally destroyed the galaxy for that, then you have Charlie completely resolved to let go. Like, huge, huge, huge. That's me just bringing Star Wars into it again.
Well, you know, somebody else who couldn't let go and his whole world exploded too or imploded was Jack in the in the flash forward in the future.
The ultimate expression of that. Everyone's calling this guy a hero entire episode, and he's not. And you know, Charlie's the one who actually was heroic. Message.
Right. So we got this thing. We think at first it's a flashback with Jack. We're not sure. We really don't find out it's a flash forward until we get, you know,
the last minute.
Within the last few seconds. Yeah, we don't realize that that's what it is. As a matter of fact, when we see the crash on the bridge, we think it's Sarah.
Yeah, you know, yeah, that's what we think.
Right, that's what we think, and that's what they story. Think. And then it's almost as if, okay, now you see Sarah Preddon, you're like, okay, now, wait a minute. He just saved somebody. Who was that then? Who else did he save? So now you're confused. You have no idea what's going on. His whole world is wrecked.
Yeah, I mean, they're playing a clearly 90s song. He has an older car. It's very, asynchronous with whatever time it is, you know, like it's wild in that way.
Well, I mean, yeah, the whole episode was just messing. I mean, the whole flashback scene was the writers throwing you off the scent of what was going to be happening. And it was so masterfully done that, I mean, the Christian Shepherd thing, you know, when he says, get my dad down here. And if he's drunker, or if I'm drunker than him, or whatever he said, he makes it seem like Christian Shepherd's still alive. So,
yeah, what a sad thing to say. You know what I mean?
yeah. And he's a drunk, oxycodone, taken guy at this point. And
what a sign of the times, too. Right. Oxycodone,
We just don't know why. You know, he goes into the pharmacy. He uses his prescription pad, his best way to try to get more oxycodone, just to kind of ease his pain to take him out. We don't know why he wants to kill himself at the beginning. We don't even get a hint of that in the end where he meets with Kate when he keeps calling her.
No, no idea.
We know that. Well, all we know from that line is, I can't keep lying. And we have no idea what this lie is, and we will find. And they left you hanging in this kind of TV era
over a long time, months and months and months.
What is this lie?
All winter,
right?
From June to I forget when it came. Like I'm sorry, January to when did it come back? Like March, maybe April. I forget. I was insane about theorizing about the show because they were giving you little tidbits. With trailers and ARGs, and it was nuts.
Right.
Between 3 and 4.
You had nothing. So you had no idea. You didn't know what was going to happen. The only people, you didn't know how many people got off the island. You're just assuming they all got off the island, but the only ones that you saw were Jack and Kate. You just assumed everybody escaped.
Don't forget the show. The episode starts on him taking an oceanic flight. Like, he's on a plane with Oceanic Airlines, taking a flight, and looking all messed up like you've never seen it before. There's an Asian couple in the back that sort of looks like Sun and Jin, but you can't really be sure. And it's like, what is going on? It's just like, what is this? You have no idea. Like, nothing makes sense. Nothing about this made sense compared to the actual continuity. But it doesn't feel like it could be the future. And that's masterful.
Yeah. By the way, if they want to give me a golden pass, I'd love to travel every weekend. I would not be offended with that. He keeps taking his golden pass and hoping himself the plane would go down. So he ended up back on the island.
Oh, man.
And the writers have another little laugh at their audience with the name of the funeral home. Obviously, the writers were great about anagrams and... What was it? Hofstrawler. Yep. I forget what it is, but
yeah, that's it.
You know,
that's it. Hofstrawler.
Looking back, you know, obviously it could be rearranged to flash forward.
Yep.
Boom. I forgot that. I was looking at that. I'm like, I was trying to remember what that was. I'm like, Hofstra. I know that that has significance. I have no idea why. Yeah, flash forward right there. Crazy.
But the whole time you're trying to figure out who's in the coffin. And
exactly.
We don't actually find that out this episode. That one's going to be drawn out a little bit longer.
You mentioned Flash Forward. One show that came off like right after Lost or right near the end of Lost was Flash Forward, and that's where that's when Dominic Monaghan was on.
It was a good show. I was bummed it got canceled.
Well, it was a good show, but their problem is that they tried to be too much like Lost until they spoiled it in the second episode when they kind of told the whole plot and everything. I'm like, well, you just kind of ruined it there, big guy.
Yeah, it was the first Lost wannabe show. And they definitely played their cards a little too close, and then let everything go, and just that show went downhill fast.
Yes, it did.
Yeah, I feel like the only show that has come close to Lost on broadcast network television has been Manifest. I think that show was probably the closest, and nowhere near the heights that Lost got. Nowhere near at all.
I never could get in Manifest. I tried.
It's worth it.
But I heard I watched the first few episodes of La Brea. La Brea kind of carries that same feel, kind of a Losty kind of feel.
I didn't like it.
Yeah,
I like the show despite in fact it's horrible. Like the acting, the CGI, it's horrible, but I enjoy it.
I don't know. So let's talk about the series Flash Forward. That was based on a 1999 novel, so it felt like that show was ripping off Lost. But the weirdest thing was it was just a coincidence that it was based on a novel that had nothing to do with Lost. Which is so weird, huh?
That's pretty weird.
Yeah, totally.
That's weird. Yeah. Well, anyway, so we get Kate. We got to go back. We don't know why. We don't know what's going on, but we'll find out in season four why they have to go back. And it's the shortest season of them all, but it's got a lot of more of the twists and turns, and it opens the world a whole lot when you get to season four. Well, it comes to the part of a show where we do our in memoriam, unless anybody's got anything else they kind of want to bring up about the storylines before we move in toward the home stretch here.
Good vibrations.
Good vibrations. I would sing it, but that could be copyright. that was really cool, Stephen. And
it was
Joe,
very cool. It was written by a musician. That's how you know, like it's fate. You know what I mean? And it gives more credence to Charlie being like, this is the moment. It all came to this. This was my this is my destiny.
It had to be Charlie.
Yeah.
Do we ever learn, though? Do we ever learn any more about the person? I don't think we do about musician. I always thought that would come back. Like, that would be another character.
I was looking forward to season five. It didn't happen.
I will say I struggle with this scene with Charlie knowing it's good vibrations and he's punching the keys in because my mind always goes to the Office scene when they're trying to learn CPR and they all just start singing Bee Gees and I'm like, no, oh my God. They're like starting on the verse, not the chorus. I'm like, no.
Yeah, how did he know that I will say that is probably the only contrivance in this whole episode. How did he know exactly where to start in the song? And like how to play it perfectly the first time playing it, like he got it on the first freaking try, and it's like that song starts in falsetto, like doo 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 doo. It's like, what, are you kidding me? Like you would start the like he got it perfectly. It's the only contrivance in the entire series, episode. But I'll give it to him.
Yeah,
it was fate.
Well, in memoriam, y'all. We this is the most we've had in one shot. We have Charlie is no longer on the show anymore. So, thank you, Charlie, for being on our show. And no more. So, in memoriam to Charlie. Also, Mikhail is gone. Finally, like he is not.
Are we sure? Are we sure he's in memoriam?
Are we 100% sure? He'll be in the sequel series. He'll come back as an old man in the sequel series. So Mikhail's there. Naomi, Almost made it to the end, and just got stabbed in the back.
I feel like she may have a few breaths left in her next.
Okay. she's pretty much gone, though. Let's just be honest.
Yeah, she's circling the drain for sure.
She is. Let's see. Mr. Friendly. I had to separate him from everybody else because we've had so much dealings with him. I'm going to miss Mr. Friendly and miss those football games after Thanksgiving dinner. It was great. And warm to him.
I did love Jack telling him when Jack thought that he had killed the Saeed and Jen and Bernard. He's like, "I'm gonna come back and I'm gonna kill you." Like I love
that. That was good.
Their football playing buddies. It was very like Liam Neeson taken of him.
Where is Matthew Fox today? Like what a scene. You know what I mean? I need this guy in way more stuff. He's so good.
I need to find out what he is doing now. But anyways, Mr. Friendly, and then you have everybody else on the beach that got blown up. That, by the way, they really zoomed in on that one like burnt up body. Did you notice that in like the pit?
You got some good crazy shots of like some hand and some bone.
Yep. Okay. So I will say this. He was in Vantage Point. He was in Lost.
Vantage Point was great.
And then you don't really – he's not – he was in World War Z as a parajumper.
Speed Racer.
He was a speed – but he's only done like four other projects since Lost. And they're not like big name things. And he's currently filming like Last Light, which is a TV miniseries, and that's it. So yeah,
He's done. I don't know what's going on.
So
– but
– so in memoriam to all those people –
I think we left out old Bonnie and Greta.
Yeah.
R.I.P.
Also, Jack Scumbag Luck. You can't forget about that. R.I.P. to Jack Scumbag Luck, which I adopted for myself in 2007, 2008. It was a hit, I'll tell you. It was a good time. So, yeah, beards and glasses and jean jackets. Yep. That's a personal one for me, I guess. But
I doubt if you guys are Kansas City Chiefs fans, but we had a coach here named Todd Haley a few years back, and there was one season he just stopped caring. He was mad at the organization. He stopped caring, grew out his beard, just looked as disheveled as humanly possible. I think just kind of out of spite for a year. And I
learned, like Matt Patricia.
Probably, yes. Okay. But Todd Haley had the drunk Jack look.
Oh, yeah.
All right. I know not of these things.
All right, Steven.
All right.
System. How are we rating this one? On a scale of 1 to 23 in our rating system, what are we rating it on?
All right. We're going to rate this out of punches straight to Ben's face. Just this guy takes a beating more than about any character I've ever seen, and he took some punches.
He's already dead.
All right, Mike, how many punches to Ben's face would you give this?
Give me straight 23 jabs to that dude's face. 23 out of 23. This was, I don't give very many perfect scores, but this, apart from accounting the storytelling, the acting, the music, just the plot. I mean, everything in this episode, in these two episodes or whatever you watch them as, is just, it's perfect TV storytelling. So it's going to get a perfect score for me, 23 out of 23. I think the only other two episodes I ever get a perfect score to was this one, the pilot episode, and season 3, episode 11, when Harley fires a Dharma van, just because... That's my favorite episode. I don't know why, it just is. So, anyways, 23 out of 23. And Corey, I think, did give it a 23 as well, out of 23 in his rankings on the other sheet.
I would give it a your score is 1 to 23?
Yes.
I'm going to go 42.
42.
The highest of the numbers. This is peak Lost storytelling. It is my favorite episode of the entire series, but also it is the culmination of literally in my mind, almost 90 years of television broadcast history. This is literally the culmination of what you have for broadcast television. It's never been as good since this moment, and I feel like all of TV over broadcast television has gone downhill from here. And it really was like the introduction of the rise of what we would have for future technology with smartphones and streaming. So it is a massive, massive, huge cultural episode. It is the greatest episode of the series, and it is a personal favorite of mine.
Awesome. How about you, Steve?
Well, I'm going to just make it a clean sweep. We'll go 23 out of 23.
Hey-o.
I will say, as I remember watching this episode too, and I remember at first being, as I was watching it, being a little disappointed in the backstory part. The island stuff was great, but I remember thinking to myself, like, I was expecting a Desmond episode, or, you know, like, season two finale, the Desmond thing was so cool. And it's like, oh, we just got another Jack thing. But the twist at the end just saved it all. You know, probably the best twist ever. And obviously all the island stuff was just perfect. So, yeah, 23 out of 23 punches to Ben's face.
Awesome. All right, as we end the discussion here, Lostpedia had nothing for unanswered questions on this episode. There was no Sawyer didn't really give a nickname on this episode, but we are still stuck.
No, he called Kate. He didn't even call her Freckles. What are you doing?
It wasn't a nickname, though.
It's all business. This is all business episode.
That's right. But we do have a total Freckle count still at 28. He never once called her Freckle again. As far as pop culture connections go, we have quite a bit. Through the Looking Glass and what Alice found there, the episode title and the station name are references to this classic Lewis Carroll children's novel. Good Vibrations is the code to the keypad on the main melody of this popular Beach Boys song, as typed in by Charlie perfectly the first time. Knew where to start. Scentless Apprentice. Jack is listening to this Nirvana song on the way to the funeral home. Nirvana singer-writer Kurt Cobain committed suicide on April 5th, the date Jack's newspaper was published.
It's so good. Such a good song.
Yeah. Rambo. Rose makes Bernard repeat he is a dentist, not Rambo. We obviously know that involves Sylvester Stallone. Moses. Naomi calls Jack Moses after the early biblical Hebrew religious leader, lawgiver, prophet, military leader, and historian. Sign of the cross. Charlie crosses himself as he dies, but he does the sign of the cross with his left hand, which makes it appear to be backwards, as seen through the looking glass. Nice little nod there.
Wow.
Additionally, as Charlie dies, light pours through the porthole, creating the image resembles the classic depictions of Christian saints.
Ooh la la. That's massive for Charlie's character, too.
Yes. Needed that. He needed that. St. Sebastian is the name of the hospital where Jack works. St. Sebastian is the patron saint of the plague and is often depicted in art as being tied to a tree, like Ben in this episode, and being shot with arrows. Charlie calls Mikhail a cyclops after the one-eyed giants of the Greek mythology. Let's see. Valhalla Rising. A copy of this 2001 book by Clive Cussler is seen on Ben's bookshelf. This book is also seen on Jack's bookshelf in his office.
This is why Lostpedia was great, because this stuff was written in real time. I remember reading this and seeing how it was being written as it came out. Guys, if you have never weren't there at the time, you have to understand that while Lostpedia was around, it was being created in real time, and literally any reference could matter a year later. You never knew. So they are so detailed. There are license plate numbers, like just randomly, and you'll find out like they don't go like so much of the stuff doesn't go anywhere. But to find out all the references that are in it is just truly, truly staggering.
Oh yeah. The last one I got though is only the last one left is Hotel. A copy of this book by Arthur Haley is also seen on Ben's bookshelf. Though the story offers no obvious parallels to Lost, Haley's most famous novel, Airport, concerned an airport and an air disaster. His first published work was the 1956 television drama Flight into Danger about a crashing plane's passengers and crew.
Yeah. Right. It is a perfect point. Never amounted to anything, but maybe could have.
Yes. All right, Steven. What is our next episode?
All right. Well, we have finished season 3, so Next time, we're just going to have a little retrospective on season 3 and some initial thoughts on season 4. Kind of tie up where we've been and see where we're going.
Usually we do our top 5 from season 3 that we really enjoyed, and our top 5 we look forward to seeing play out in season 5 or season 4. I think that's what we did.
Yeah.
Last time. So absolutely, it was good. Well, listen, y'all, it's been great. We probably could have talked about this episode another 2 hours and kept going 2, 3, 4 hours. It's a great episode of television. We miss Corey. We know he's working, and we want him to work hard. But hey, it was great to have Joe with us. Thanks, the man himself.
Yeah, thanks so, a lot.
Really appreciate being on. I love the show.
Absolutely. If there's another episode you like coming, let us know, and we'll get you on that episode.
You got it, man. I will definitely be prepared. I'll have to take a look. There's definitely a couple coming up. I could probably do some damage on. We'll see.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah, that's true. We ought to get you on like one of the really bad ones that are coming up. The ones that were just really terrible episode. We already had the
tattoo episode. You already got through that. You guys are more than halfway done, which is still like just a massive testament to how amazing the show is.
Yeah, and we've already gone through Exposé too. That was a terrible one.
Oh yeah, Billy D on it.
Steven loved Exposé. He's like big fan. That big is face. Like my 23 out of 23 right there. Oh, all right, guys. Well, listen, you know where to find us. Join us in Discord, and we'd love to talk to you more about it. And until next time, stay safe, be careful, and remember, if you see somebody outside your window with a grenade, you may want to go ahead and run out and shut the door instead of having to waste permanent marker and water by writing Not Penny's Boat so nobody will understand what you say in life. All right. Anyways, take care, everybody. Have a good one, and we'll see you here in a couple weeks.
Have a good one.